Welcome, everybody. This is Fireside Sports, or more specifically, this time, Fireside Sports Evil Twin Podcast Edition. The Fireside Sports today is hosted by me, Bryant Knox. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, you are probably very confused. But you know what? As the Evil Twin, that's just how I like it. For the confused, our special guest this week is Casey Matthews. Sorry. Casey Mabbitt of Oregon Sports News. Please check out the Oregon Sports News website for all your local sports coverage. You know, it's where you can find this very podcast, but it's also where you can find my work, shameless plug. It's where you can find coverage on all your local sports needs from many talented and local writers here in this area. So, Mr. Mabbitt, answer me a couple questions here. How do you feel? How did this happen where we are today? And how do we make the world right again by getting you back in the driver's seat?
Well, I feel pretty good whether I'm Casey Mabbitt or Casey Matthews, because Mr. Matthews is brother to Clay, who's a Green Bay Packer, so I'm fine with that, even though my career apparently didn't take off, so, you know, shame on me. How this happened, it's a weird twist of fate, you know? Sometimes you just wander into a parallel universe and you don't really know what's what or what to believe, and, you know, they teach you in survival classes to just go with it until you get your bearings. So I guess we'll just do that and hope that this is some horrible nightmare where I haven't lost my show to some crazy, evil, mad scientist named Bryant, even though that's a really cool thing that could happen. And how do we get back to normal? You know, if this is the new normal, I'm cool with it. It's not a scary world. It's just a different world. So if this is the norm, that's fine with me, but I'll go back to the old way too. We'll figure it out, you know. If it needs to be a hybrid of what it was and what it will be, that's fine.
Well, in the meantime, we'll embrace change. I, for one, am typically afraid of change, so I don't even know how this is going to go. Hopefully you're better at change than I am, because you'll make up for any lack of competency that I have in this particular seat. But you know what's around the corner? It's the big game. I know I'm going to break some rules here, and I'm going to call it the Super Bowl from here on out. But the big game, the Super Bowl, is around the corner. So I say we dive right in into our Super Bowl special with what else? A quarterback that is not in the Super Bowl. Casey, just minutes before we logged on here. Well, there's a lot of those, but just minutes before we started chatting here, one in particular made the news, and I just want your super quick take on it. What is going on with Alex Smith right now?
Alex Smith is now the new Kirk Cousins, as he got traded to Washington, and Washington is now willing to let Cousins play the free agent market, so somehow, overnight, the entire world imploded. So you're a host of this podcast. I'm the co-host or guest star, whatever we're calling that. Gene's on vacation, so we don't have the evil producer here in town. And now Kirk Cousins is walking away from Washington after getting like $11 billion to play quarterback, kind of. And Alex Smith, who we thought was safe in Kansas City for another year or two, maybe, while they got Patrick Mahomes up to speed, I guess they're thinking he's up to speed already and they're ready to roll with him. And they said goodbye to Alex. They're getting to get a draft pick in return, maybe a pair of them. I'm not quite sure on what the official compensation is, but this is interesting to say the least. I, for one, I'll raise my hand and be honest. I didn't know that teams could trade this time of year. I thought you had to wait till after the Super Bowl when the offseason officially starts, but maybe that's just me being confused as the casual fan, but you know, I think all in all, it's a good thing. It gets Kirk Cousins out there to another team that really wants him, because if anything, we've seen Washington probably doesn't want him long term. They failed to lock him into a contract that really suited both sides. And, you know, for all we know, they'll franchise tag him again and then also try to trade him. It wouldn't be the weirdest thing in the world. But most likely, he's going to go somewhere else. The really weird thing now is where he would probably have gone before is San Francisco, but they've got Jimmy Garoppolo. So to now those two teams figure out a swap and get Cousins over there and Garoppolo over to Washington, does San Francisco bow out because they've got their guy now? Opens up this whole can of worms I did not see coming. What's your reaction, Bryant?
Well, I'm with you in the sense that I didn't see it coming. I think very few people did see this coming. I think that, you know, there's two very specific hot takes here. One is that it's a conservative move, but a good move on Washington's part. But it's also the other end of the spectrum is that it's sort of a laughable move because you're bringing in a quarterback who, while you know, very good, is not known for taking risks. He's not known for necessarily, or people on that side of the spectrum don't expect him to, you know, take them necessarily to that next level. I think they'll be a little bit better, a little bit more consistent. But I doubt, and I guess I side a little bit more with the people on that end of the spectrum, that I doubt he is the piece for them. I'm definitely more interested in Kirk Cousins at this point, because I think, you know, they've already locked up Alex Smith since we started talking. Alex Smith has been locked up for 4 years. He's now officially on board. He has signed an extension with Washington, and with Kirk Cousins, you know, that's kind of a slap in the face because they refused to do that. And yet within minutes of them trading for Alex Smith, they've gone ahead and given him that extension. So I think for Kirk Cousins, you know, you and I have talked in the past few weeks, almost debating about what's going to happen with the quarterback position in Jacksonville. Is Blake Bortles good enough to stay there, or do they need to look to improve that position? I think that probably comes up here. I don't think he ends up there because I think Jacksonville wants to see what they have in Bortles. I wouldn't be shocked to see Washington honor the idea that he can go test free agency and he ultimately ends up in a place like Denver. I think that would make a lot of sense for all involved. Do you have any predictions off the top of your head? Any solid predictions that you would put your money down on?
That's where it gets so tough, especially in this league where everything changes so quickly. I would have said if this had happened, you know, last year it was a no-brainer he was going to San Francisco. Now, honestly, Arizona's a player. He's from the Midwest, so he could go to Chicago. They don't know if they've got a future quarterback in Trubisky or not. He could go to Minnesota. They don't really have any foolproof starters, and I think that would be the best place for him if he can't go to a Jacksonville, is go somewhere where there's an established defense, established running game, established receiving core, established coaching staff, and a team that really wants to win and win now, and they've got money to spare. I would say if he doesn't go to Jacksonville, it's got to be Minnesota. Anywhere else, and I think he's working towards something instead of working to win now.
Speaking of Minnesota, Casey, there's a big game there this weekend. I said I wasn't going to call it the big game anymore.
Can't call it the AFL-NFL championship anymore. It just doesn't roll off the tongue the way it did in 64. Or 67, it does not. Whatever it was.
I know. When you go back to the good old days. there's a big game there.
Before we get into that, can we real quick talk about that the following week is the Winter Olympics and how much of a travesty it is that there's no football in the Winter Olympics?
It is a shame, but who would compete?
I don't know. You know, maybe they could make it, you know, rugby rules or something and have Australia against America or something. I mean, that could be neat. I would really like to see Canada play because I think that actually could have some talent in there.
Hey, you know what? With the XFL coming back in 2020, we now have three major leagues that could compete against one another. We could have the point total soccer style competition where all three of the Canadians, the NFL, and the XFL play each other, and the point total at the very end declares the winner.
Well, I mean, we still have the basketball tournament every 4 years, even though we all kind of figure who's going to win at this point. Do we stop having a sport that's internationally loved just because there's only one team that can really compete at it? Or do we do it because we want to see what the other nations can do with that sport, even though it's not played around the world? And that could be the problem. And, you know, maybe that's shame on us that we're only trying to get it into China, London, and Mexico. We need to branch out here.
Yeah, you got to branch out, but you got to be more successful in those other efforts as well. I think that, you know, establishing a fan base really is one of the foundational pieces there. And I think, you know, the NBA has done a better job with that because they've had more to work with.
Right.
There are legitimate leagues that compete at a high level and look to funnel their players into the NBA. the world as a whole does not have that for the NFL. So the NFL definitely has a steeper hill to climb in terms of, you know, getting the rest of the world on board with its game. For what it's worth, I'd love to see it. I would absolutely love to see, you know, the rugby organizations and the Aussie football rules, those types of things. I would love to see those guys potentially play in a universal type game against NFL teams. I just don't really see it happening anytime soon, especially with all the controversy surrounding the NFL at this point.
Would you be willing to have the Super Bowl be an international game to get some more legs under the international scope? I mean, like, if this game on Sunday were in London, would that bother you? Or if it were in China or Mexico or wherever?
It wouldn't bother me, but I guarantee it would bother all the people who actually have invested the money to attend the game. Because then you're talking a whole lot more expenses just to make it happen.
Sure.
Speaking of expenses to make it happen, though, this game is phenomenal for so many reasons. There are so many things to get jazzed about when it comes to this game. But the truth is, there's basically no way to get to it unless you are stupid rich. Now, I know there are exceptions to that, but this game in particular, this year's version of the game, is looking like it's going to be the most expensive game to get to in terms of average ticket price. So I'm going to throw a little pop quiz at you here. I'm going to ask you to make your best guess on what you think the average ticket price is to get into the Super Bowl, and then what you think the most expensive ticket is to get into the Super Bowl.
Average ticket, I'm going to say, is $1,200. And most expensive, I'm going to go with 10 G's.
Okay. You are a little off. And by a little off, I mean you need a lot more money than that.
For even the average ticket?
The 2018 Super Bowl is looking, it's tracking right now to have an average ticket cost of $5,415.
That's just admission. That's not hotel or anything.
Nope, that is just the average price of an individual ticket sold.
Huh.
And that is in excess of $1,000 more than the average price for the current most expensive Super Bowl, which was Super Bowl 50. With the Panthers and the Denver Broncos.
It costs a lot of money to make people want to go to Minnesota, okay?
Says the Green Bay fan.
Yeah. It's not cheap. You know, people are they need to pay them. I'm surprised they're taking money for this.
As far as the most expensive ticket goes, you said 10G. You were about 50% of the way there.
Wow.
Currently, the most expensive seat purchased on a secondary market was $22,000. But that's probably going to
rise. So what's face value?
What's that?
What's the face value, though?
That I don't know. The face value is almost impossible to find. And I fully admit that I don't quite understand how the ticket sales go. But what I do know is that very few tickets are sold to the public. Most are sold to season ticket holders, or they're sold to corporations, and then corporations divvy them out. It's actually very, very difficult to come across any ticket at face value. What I can add on to this is that StubHub actually has one ticket going right now at a sort of buy it now cost as the most expensive one out there for $279,000 for a turf suite. My guess, nobody on this planet is going to bother to buy that ticket at that cost, and they'll probably lower it the closer they get to the game. But the fact that somebody has the gall to actually post it at that price is pretty wild.
Someone will pay it.
Obviously, neither you or I can even comprehend spending that type of money on a ticket. What would you do off the top of your head to earn a shot to sit in a turf suite at the Super Bowl?
See, I'm the boring sport fan that loves that TV has gotten as crazy as it is. And, you know, I've got a buddy that has a 106-inch HD projector. And if you feel like you're in the stadium and watching on that, and I'm not sure that I would be willing to pay or do anything to go all the way to Minnesota just to watch not the Vikings lose. So I don't know. I'd be, you know, if they wanted to pay me what they're paying Matt Hoyer to go, which is a lot more than he deserves, I might do that, you know, watch from the sideline. But as far as, like, from a turf suite, I don't know. I think I'd probably like to drink my own beer and stay home and watch it from home.
That is very fair. My guess is that your own beer is probably going to cost you less than, let's say, $16 a pint.
That's between me and Fred Meyer, Bryant. Keep out of it.
Fred Meyer, if you're looking to sponsor any podcasts, let us know.
Or Pizza Schmita, you know, that would... You know, that's 2 weeks in a row we've dropped your name. I don't want to bring this up in the air, but I don't know about you, Brian. I did not get my check in the mail. So I don't know who we talked to about that.
I'll look into it. Maybe if we drop their name a third week in a row.
The barbecue pizza was delicious. And we'll check for the check.
We will check for that check.
Yeah.
So...
I would say if they need to somehow make my amazing TV not work on Super Bowl Sunday, if they want me to pay $5,000 to watch the same game in their studio.
Very fair. Let's get into some actual football here. Okay. Tom Brady's hand. It's the most talked about hand in all of sports right now. Although, actually, before we started recording, Kevin Love broke his hand and is out for 6 to 8 weeks. So maybe it's not actually the most talked about hand at this exact moment, but it has been
classic
the most
Kevin
talked
Love.
About hand just leading up to this game. You know, has this all just been noise for you? Were you ever even really worried about this? Or at some point did you think, okay, this is actually bad news for New England? Maybe not this most recent week, but maybe the week leading up to the conference championship game.
When I heard how many stitches he had put into it, that worried me quite a bit. And I'm not sure I know the whole story of how he injured it, or if it hurt, or if he just needed stitches to hold it in. You know, he is kind of old, so maybe it just fell apart. I don't know.
Yeah. But was it 12 stitches? Did I read that right?
Yeah, I believe it was, which I thought, you know, wow, that's a big cut if that's how many he needs. I mean, what happened? If I recall correctly, it hurt it in practice, so probably got hit by a helmet or something and tore open. But, you know, it's his right hand, so especially in the cold weather last week, I was really impressed that he was able to put the zip on the ball. I thought that was really going to be a struggle for him. But, you know, he probably got a pain shot before the game and just had to go out there and sling it, and it probably hurts him this week, and he'll probably get another shot for this weekend. But I don't know. I feel like the big-name players, they know how to get through the game, even if they're playing through pain. I mean, Brett Favre had a broken thumb on his throwing hand for a year, and he played through that. And, you know, so guys have played through weird injuries before. Drew Brees played through a torn rotator cuff. Brett Favre did the same thing. Peyton Manning played a whole season with a pinched nerve in his back, couldn't feel his fingers. I feel like the greats just find a way to get it done, so I can't say that I ever really worried about Brady playing and playing well at that point.
Yeah, that's what separates us from the greats. I don't know if you have any legendary hand injury stories, but one time I was working at the Dollar Tree, shout out Dollar Tree, and I ended up cutting a finger of mine on my dominant hand. They put 4 stitches in it. The doctors did. I had 4 little stitches on my index finger on my dominant hand. And I kid you not, I took a week off work because I couldn't punch numbers on a cash register. So that is what separates us from the greats right there.
Yeah. And on Brady's hand, you know, I don't know that it really would have mattered, because that team just finds a way to win no matter the circumstance. I mean, we've seen that since 2001, that was when his career trajectory really started, and we've just been seeing it ever since. He doesn't seem to slow down. No matter what happens, you know, he was in a walking boot the week before the 07 Super Bowl. He still went out and played a heck of a game, almost won against the Giants. Brady, the only time I've seen him with a significant injury that worried me was in 08 when he had that knee injury and was out for the season. Other than that, I don't know that he's missed a game on his own. Roger Goodell. But he's just been, you know, we talk about Brett Favre as the Iron Man, and we talk about Cal Ripken Jr. as the Iron Man, and all these other people that have done such great things, and we really don't say enough how much of an Iron Man Tom Brady has been, that he's just Mr. Dependable. He'll get everything done. He'll do it well. You never have to worry about him having a bad playoff game. The guy just gets it done. I'm not sure we ever really had anything to worry about.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, I know that this has been such a storyline for 2.5 weeks now that there were some, quiet fans on the other side of the football aisle saying, hey, maybe he's not going to be able to play. I know that conversation was more prominent ahead of the Jacksonville game than it is this one. But I mean, as someone who doesn't have a dog in this particular fight, as someone who is not a Tom Brady fan but loves great football, there's no way I would want to see a Patriots game in the Super Bowl without Tom Brady.
No.
Like, I'm not rooting for the Patriots by any means, but I wouldn't want to watch this particular matchup with Tom Brady sitting on the sideline. First of all, I'd get sick and tired of seeing his face on the broadcast when he wasn't playing, because you know that's what they would show in between every play. But even more specifically, I just want to see the best football game possible, and I think a healthy Tom Brady makes that possible.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I don't think we have anything to worry about this week. He played last week, played really well. I mean, not so great in the first half, but figured out that defense in the second half and got the job done. So I think we'll see good old Tom Terrific out there this Sunday. I don't think we have anything to worry about.
What do you think specifically about him versus the Philly defense? Do you think that, you know, health aside, because at this point we're going to assume that it's just noise and he's healthy, what do you think about the actual matchup?
I think it's a great matchup. This Philly defense is severely underrated. I don't know a lot of people that are fully aware of how great they really are. I mean, the play calling is phenomenal from Jim Schwartz, who's the defensive coordinator. But not only that, they know how to get to the quarterback. They know how to cover the run. I believe they were first against the run this year. They know how to defend the pass. They have an underrated secondary. They don't have a great secondary. They're not going to shut you down, but they're really good. They're above average. I think they're going to give Brady some trouble. If they can make him move around with that ferocious pass rush they have, that can play to their favor, because he's not great on the run. He doesn't really run, so that's why he's not great on the run. He's not great on, you know, the waltz or whatever we're calling when an old man dances behind the pocket. And, you know, he can't put velocity on the ball when he's on the move. So if they can force him to get happy feet and move around, shuffle around, dive, duck, dip, dive, you know, and dodge, you know, the 5 D's of dodgeball, I think that could really help.
I'm well aware of the 5 D's of dodgeball.
he Patches O'Houlihan would tell you that he's got a shot, and I like it. He's got a puncher's chance, but you know, honestly, as crazy as it sounds, I think the Philly D has the edge in this one. They're a lot like the 07 and 2011 Giants teams that gave him a lot of trouble. You know, he barely survived Jacksonville. I think Philly is just as good, but on a different way. They are relentless, and I think their play calling is a little more creative and exotic, and I that's nothing against Todd Wash and the Jacksonville defense. It's just Jim Schwartz knows how to get it done, and he knows Bill Belichick teams because he used to be on them. So I actually think they've got a bit of an edge here, as crazy as that sounds.
Well, I don't think it's crazy at all. I mean, the Eagles, along with the Jaguars and the Vikings, were the only team in the entire season to hold opponents to 10 or fewer points more than 5 times during the regular season. And Philly has now done that in back-to-back playoff games. Philly has surrendered only 17 points in these playoffs. And by the way, 7 of those came off of an 18-yard touchdown drive resulting from a muffed punt.
Right.
So this defense has actually been extremely impressive. Just like getting to the heart of the question, though, do you think they can rattle Tom Brady? I know the matchup, the X's and O's, but do you think that Tom Brady, you know, arguably the greatest of all time, is going to be rattled by that? Or do you think that all of that leading up to this is just fun to talk about? It's fun. It's a fun narrative, and that Brady's going to really come away, you know, looking pretty golden at the end.
I think they do have a real chance at it. It's going to have to be a relentless pass rush like they faced against the Giants in the 2 Super Bowls that he lost. if aside from that, if you know, if they can get pressure up front without blitzing, that's the key, because Tom Brady can beat you no matter how many times you blitz or how many guys you blitz. But if you can rush four and get pressure and drop seven into coverage, that makes it really tough for him to dissect your defense, especially if you're changing up coverages or disguising coverages before the snap. Jim Schwartz is a defensive dynamo. I mean, he doesn't get enough credit for being such a good play caller. The Eagles are so lucky that he came over there. I mean, he had a great defense in Detroit, a great defense in Buffalo, now a great defense in Philadelphia. He's a really good play caller, and I think one of the keys here is, can he stay consistently inconsistent from showing New England what he's doing? Because that's been the problem that has for teams that face New England, is they get stagnant. You've got to keep showing them new looks. You can't let them figure you out. They say, you know, don't add new wrinkles in the playoffs, and I'm not saying add new wrinkles, but I am saying make sure you're not calling repeat plays or repeat coverages. Even if you're calling the same play, make sure you're disguising your coverage. And, you know, you better be watching your own film this week, because I guarantee you Tom Brady's watching your film. See what your tendencies are and go against them. Give him new looks that he hasn't seen before. But it shouldn't be changing your game plan. It just, you need to confuse him and get after him. And I think they can do that.
I think they can too. I think that if you were to, you know, if I were to make a very general prediction right now, who got the better end of the deal by the end of the Super Bowl, Tom Brady or the Philly defense, I think Tom Brady comes out the winner there. But I do think that Philly gets, you know, close to staking that claim. And I think that they just have done enough throughout the year that, you know, there's no problem having confidence in them against anybody in the league. And the fact that they're going up against Tom Brady and the New England offense really is the ultimate test. Let's switch sides here, though. And what do you think about Philly's offense versus New England's defense?
I think the Philly offense has a good chance to make some waves here, just because Doug Peterson's a heck of a play caller. You know, a lot of people really questioning how good of a coach or play caller he would be coming out of Andy Reid's system in Kansas City. And he was a backup quarterback behind Brett Favre for years and years. And we seem to be seeing that a lot in the NFL these days. These backup quarterbacks keep popping up and becoming amazing head coaches and offensive coordinators. I think that he's got a shot to call a really good game. He's got to be wary of what Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, the Patriots defensive coordinator, are going to throw at him. To his favor, you know, they don't have the playmakers on defense that he does. And on offense, there's so many playmakers for Philly that if Nick Foles can have a good game the way he did last week against the Vikings and not have kind of a mediocre game like he did against Atlanta, I think this can be a game that Philadelphia can win, but he's going to have to be in the driver's seat and put points on the board consistently. If he gets to a point where he's coming from behind, that scares me a little, because Brady is great at putting points on the board, and I don't think that Foles can win a shootout. He's got to get ahead and stay ahead and count on his defense to get stops, and that way he can just go to – I mean, he runs the read pass option, which is great because that throws the defense off, and New England is one of the worst at defending that. I believe they are fifth in the league for points and plays allowed to that. And it definitely benefits Foles because it's a simple college-based offense, and that seems to be what his strong suit is. We've seen him try to run pro style, and it just hasn't worked as well. The RPO definitely works for him. So if they can do that, confuse the defense, get some good running game going with Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount, and then get some quick passes out there to Torrey Smith and Nelson Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz, and really get the ball going to all different people and get some points on the board. That's important. You got to get points. They struggled with that against Minnesota early on. They got lucky that the game went a different way, but it looked like Minnesota was going to put up some points against them, and they turned it around. They've got to make sure that they get out early against Brady and keep the lead.
What do you make of the fact that Philly enters this game as the underdog for their third straight playoff game? New England enters this game as 4.5-point favorites. You know, the Eagles have I guess you could say they've thrived with this mentality that they come in as the underdog. Is that something that you think maybe this vaunted defense looks at this as a challenge, but maybe also this quarterback, it starts to get in his head a little bit that he's up against one of the greatest teams of all time. Do you think, you know, from your perspective, do you think that being an underdog and having success multiple times in a row throughout a playoff helps them? Or do you think they are ignoring it? Or like I said, do you think that it starts to get into the head of someone maybe controlling the offense like a Nick Foles?
I think it definitely benefits them to be underdogs. It puts that chip on their shoulder. They feel disrespected and they want to do that. I promise you that even if they weren't the underdogs, they'd tell people they were because they want to go into that chip on their shoulder and prove the world wrong that they were the team to beat and all this and all that. As far as Nick Foles go, I think it benefits him that in the last 2 weeks, he's had two really good games, one great game and one really good game. And he's faced two masterful play callers in Dan Quinn of Atlanta and Mike Zimmer of Minnesota. And now he faces Bill Belichick. So the key here is that three opponents in a row have been defensive coordinators that turned into head coaches that are still very much involved in their defense and are some of the best defensive masterminds we've ever seen. So he's been able to attack those and keep his team ahead. And that's going to be really critical because Belichick and Brady and Patricia have had an extra two weeks of time to sit through this and see what happens. I don't know that he can come out and shock the world, but I think if he can be like 07 Eli Manning and just do enough to get the job done and not make any critical mistakes, you know, you and I talked last week a lot about what it means to win the game versus don't lose the game. I think he will need to win the game, but more importantly, he can't lose the game for him. If he's in tight spots, he needs to learn to throw the ball away, run away from coverage and run away from tacklers. Don't take sacks, you know, don't give points back. Don't make critical negative point throws that give the points to the defense. You can't do that. Brady and Belichick are just too darn good. Josh McDaniels, their offensive coordinator, too darn good. The Seahawks burned themselves with a golden opportunity a couple years ago to kick Brady and Belichick to the curb. And I would hate to see this team do the same thing. They've got such a good team, such a good thing going. I think they have all the tools to get the win. It's just a matter of if they go in and are intimidated by this greatest team of all time, I don't think that's going to happen. But if they go in thinking, we're here too, we matter, we're just another side of the coin, we're underdogs, but it's a Super Bowl, so 4.5 points really means almost nothing. It's just Vegas telling you that, you know, they slightly favor New England, but they think that's an even-up game. I think that's a fair assessment. I think this one's going to be tight. You look at Tom Brady's Super Bowls, not one of them has been decided by fewer points than a touchdown, which is just crazy. He's been involved in the only overtime game in Super Bowl history. He's been involved in amazing comebacks. He's been the victim of amazing comebacks, but he's never been involved in a blowout in the Super Bowl, so I don't expect him to be in one this year either. I think this will be a close one, and I do think it's one Philly can win.
You talked about Vegas setting the line. I'm not sure if you saw this, but the line, the money line in particular, has actually been inching in favor of the Eagles all week long. The initial line came out. Can't remember exactly what it was. It was something like plus 245, 215, something like that. And it's been slowly creeping toward the Eagles. Now, obviously, it's never going to reach the point where the Eagles are favored. But one thing that I find extremely interesting is that one bettor somewhere in the world, couldn't tell you his or her name or where they live, but one bettor placed a $1 million bet on the Eagles when they were at plus 165. Now, the way the money line works, for anyone listening who doesn't know, the way a money line works is that if you're at plus 165, that means you need to bet $100. And if the outcome is correct, you win 165. Vice versa, if you're at minus 160 and you bet $160, that's what it would take to win $100. That's the most layman description I can put it at. But there was one individual bettor who put $1 million bet on the Eagles And actually, this certain individual was solely responsible for shifting the line from 165 to plus 160.
Wow.
The reason for that is because if this person wins, it's going to pay out at $1.65 billion. Like at plus 165 with a $1 million bet, it would pay out at $1.65 billion. So Vegas had to compensate a little bit for the potential payout there. But what's really interesting, even beyond that, is the fact that throughout the week, the line really has been going in the Eagles' favor. I'm curious from your perspective, what's the difference between your thought process right now versus when this game was initially set up after the championship week?
From my perspective, nothing's really changed for me. I mean, I feel like the Eagles deserve to be underdogs, but I think it's fair that they're slight underdogs. They have a great team. I think this would be more even up, if not favored, if Carson Wentz were healthy. But Nick Foles has proven he's a capable quarterback, and we've seen backup quarterbacks win the Super Bowl before. So I don't know that the Vegas has seen anything to make it that way other than maybe they wanted to get some people to bet on the Eagles early, and now they're evening it out so that when they get money this way, it's going to be more even. They don't have to pay out as much. But I feel like it's almost like stocks. Like, they're just trying to drive up interest, and then as it gets closer, they just start closing it down to make people bet more even up. I'm not sure that they've seen anything change. I don't know if you have, but I don't really see anything in the last 6-7 days that's made me think this is a different game than it was originally when it was set.
Now, if anything, I would have predicted the opposite just because Tom Brady's health is becoming more clear. I would have expected that the odds would shift in New England's favor. The more pictures we get of Tom Brady's hand and the more statements we get about it. But then again, I'm clearly not an odds maker for a reason. So what do I know?
Well, and we've seen a guy from Boston that throws for a living make great games happen with stitches in his appendage. So I don't think that this is an issue.
Very true. You ready for the most important question of the podcast, Casey?
I am.
Are you going to watch the halftime show?
I am. I don't know if I'll have my eye on it the whole time, but, you know, JT's pretty dope. So if he's there, then I'll check it out. You know, maybe they'll even get Jimmy Fallon to come out for a minute and they can do some history of rap or something. But it'll be interesting. You know, Lady Gaga was really good last year, and I think Bruno Mars the year before that. It's been pretty good for halftime shows recently. You know, they had quite a few years there in a row that I just didn't want to watch at all, whereas now I think I will. What about you?
Oh, JT's my boy. Yeah. I doubt that's ever come up on this podcast. I can't see a reason why it would have, but JT is absolutely my boy. I will be watching. I will be critiquing. I will be very excited. Hey, if Jimmy Fallon jumps up there, that's bonus points. I'll definitely take that little history of rap part 11-teen or whatever they're on. But either way, I'm going to be very excited to see that. I know that there's some controversy there and people want to talk about, you know, the wardrobe malfunction and how he didn't quite get the backlash that his partner in crime got. I do understand that perspective, but I also am just ready to see a good show. And I think that he, you know, if his entire body of work and his entire resume is any proof, he's going to put on a good show. Here's another important question for you, though.
Okay.
Who is going to have the best commercial in this thing? Is it going to be an emotional Budweiser commercial? Is Doritos going to give another infant child CTE crashing, trying to find a Dorito? Who's going to win this thing this year?
You know, the only one I've seen so far that I think will be my favorite until it gets dethroned is Peyton Manning going around Universal Studios. I think that's going to be my favorite so far.
Yes. I completely agree with you there, at least from what I've seen as well.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, Chris Pratt's going to have a Michelob Ultra commercial, and I'm not sure how exciting that's going to be to watch a guy on a diet drink beer, but it's a diet beer, but, you know, Chris Pratt can make anything funny if he tries, especially if he plays Andy Richter, or not Andy Richter, I'm blanking on his name, but Andy from Parks and
Rec. Oh, Andy Dwyer.
Yeah. You know, if they have him do that character, that'd be great. But I don't know if we're
Andy Dwyer is all of us. He is. So I completely agree.
I have also broken the coffee pot with ramen. So I don't. It would be great if they could find a way to work that in. But who knows?
Love it.
But yeah, so far the one I've seen that I like the most is Peyton Manning going around Universal, especially when he's talking about how to use a wand. You know, that was just, that's gold. So we'll see if somebody else comes up with something better, but that's the favorite for me so far.
The one I'm always the most curious about is GoDaddy, because I feel like they are either going to be super funny and hit the mark on every level, or they're going to try something way too extreme and they're going to go down as the worst commercial of all time.
Yeah, they might have two commercials and one from either end of the spectrum, so who knows?
Casey, we are coming up on our time here, so I have a game that I'd love to play with you here.
Okay.
It's called, very aptly, 10 Rapid Fire Prop Bet Prediction Game, because I am going to make a game out of 10 Rapid Fire Prop Bet predictions. I can't even say it right, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
I'm going to throw 10... just random prop bets for the Super Bowl. There are hundreds of them out there, so we could make an entire podcast out of that. But I chose 10 that I think are interesting enough. And I just want your super quick take, your rapid reaction on each of them. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, first one. This is the one that I would guess collects the most money in Vegas every single year.
Okay.
Coin toss. Heads, minus 105. Remember the money line description from earlier? Yeah. Minus 105 means you have to pay $105 to win a $100 payout. So coin toss, heads, minus 105. Tails, not shockingly, also minus 105. Where are you going here?
We're going heads.
Heads, I like it. Team to score first. New England is at minus 140. Philly is the underdog at plus 110. Where are you going?
I'm going to go Philadelphia. I think they'll lose the coin toss, get the ball first, and score.
Oh, I like it. I like the specificity there. Next one. Will either team score three unanswered touchdowns? Now, for the record, this prop bet does go all the way up to six. Vegas has options. Say, will a team score three, four, five, or six unanswered touchdowns? I went with the conservative one at three for this. So will either team, the Patriots or the Eagles, score three unanswered touchdowns? Yes, minus 170. No, plus 140.
I'm going to go no. I don't think this game will be like that.
I completely agree. In my opinion, there's no way. I am shocked that the yes is actually favored in this one. I can see why, just because, you know, if you have that much faith in, say, Tom Brady and they get ahead, Philly could start to make some mistakes trying to play catch up.
Right.
But I don't see the game playing out that way. Next one, since we're in rapid fire and I'm spending too much time talking, total turnovers in this game. Under 2.5 is a minus 175, or over 2.5 is the underdog at plus 145.
I'm going to go under, and I hope that that's the case, because nobody likes to see a sloppy Super Bowl.
Yeah, but people like interceptions.
They do.
I think I would go over on this one.
Okay.
Because I think you probably get one from Brady, two from Foles, and that puts you slightly over the 2.5. Next one, will the Eagles have a scoreless quarter, any quarter? Yes is a overwhelming favorite at minus 400. No is the underdog at plus 300.
I'm going to say yes, they will.
Yeah, I think so too. Just I think one. That you end up with at least one just – defensive quarter. I don't think you end up with a sloppy quarter from both teams, but I think that you definitely end up with a quarter that is a bit more conservative, and New England can shut them down for one.
If they go into the fourth quarter up 38-10, why would they score?
What's
the point?
Will this game go to overtime, Casey? No, the overwhelming favorite at minus 1600. So if you put $100 down on no, or excuse me, if you put $1,600 down on no, you only get a $100 payout. Or yes, this game will go to overtime at plus 800, meaning it only costs you $100 to get an $800 payout.
The only time we've seen Super Bowl overtime is when we also had the greatest Super Bowl comeback of all time. So I'm going to go with no.
Very safe bet.
It's been over 50 years of no, so I think no is the right answer.
Safe bet. Not exciting, but I'm right there with you. These last ones will knock out into extra fast pace. Most receiving yards in this game. Gronk is the favorite at plus 300. Then you have Cooks at 400, Ertz at 400, Alshon Jeffrey at 500, Chris Hogan at 700, and Amendola also at 700.
Is Aguilar not on there?
Not on this particular top list, no.
Then I will go with Alshon.
Am I take the field?
I'll take the field.
Okay. I don't have odds for the field at the moment. I do think it's kind of crazy to think that Gronk is going to be the leading receiving player in this game. I think that if you want to go for total receiving touchdowns, he might be it because he might get two.
Right.
But there's no way that I would go with him as the favorite in terms of receiving yards. So I think the field is actually a nice choice there.
Yeah.
Most rushing yards. Jay Ajayi is the favorite, the only one with a minus money line. He's at minus 140. Then you have Deion Lewis at 150, LeGarrette Blount at 500, James White at 1200, and Burkhead at 1200. What's your gut telling you?
Well, is Burkhead playing? I thought he was out for the season.
Well, I know that
he's a long odds bet.
Like, I wouldn't have even brought it up except that he was ahead of the field. So I have no idea if people know something we don't know, but he was on the list.
Well, even if he's on the list, I'm going to count him out. I think that I'm going to go with Deion Lewis.
Like it. Final one here, number 10. Will there be a defensive touchdown? No is a favorite at minus 225. Yes is at plus 185.
I'm going to go no.
Okay. With all of that in mind and everything we have talked about, what's your final prediction here, Casey?
Final prediction is Eagles win 38-10.
38-10. I like it. How do you think that plays out specifically? Because that's a bigger margin than I would have expected.
You know, that's probably closer to what last year's Super Bowl should have been if Atlanta had remembered how to play football in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Someone should have reminded them. You know, maybe they should have blacked out the stadium. That's worked in the past. I think that Brady's going to be under fire. I think he's going to struggle in this one. I don't think they have the defense to slow down the Eagles' attack. I think you've just got too much talent on the Eagles and their coaching staff. I think New England, as great as they've been, I think we've seen them kind of slipping and deserving to lose. I think this is finally the one where they get run out of the stadium. We haven't seen that from them in a Super Bowl either way, whether it's as the winners or the losers. Even when they've lost, it's been really tight. Last year, they were going to get blown out, and then they came back. I don't think this team lets them back in. I think Foles is very savvy early on and leads his team the same way he did against the Vikings. I think after he got past Atlanta and Minnesota, this team will be much easier on the defensive end, even though it'll be a little more exotic than he's used to because that's just what they do. But on defense, I think Philadelphia is going to get after it and make New England earn it. I don't think New England has the firepower on offense to really keep up with this Eagles team. I think we like to think that they're a juggernaut, but they're just not. I think if Gronkowski were healthy, I mean, I don't even know if he's going to play. He's still in concussion protocol. And they've got Alshon Jeffrey. They've got Nelson Aguilar. They've got Jay Ajayi. They've got all these guys they can get the ball to. Zach Ertz is a really capable tight end. I just think Philadelphia's got too much firepower to come out of this one with a loss, and I think they're going to actually put a lot of points on New England and not see many return to them.
Real quick, because we're up against the wall as far as our timeline goes, but who do you think this Super Bowl means more for? Do you think it means more for a Patriots team that's up against, you know, probably the end of its legacy, or at least deep into the twilight of its legacy, or more for a Philly team that is looking to establish something that could potentially become a dynasty or at least a solid run?
I think this absolutely means more to Philadelphia. They've never won one as a franchise. This is their third. They haven't won one yet. They've lost two. And that's in three different eras too. They lost in the 1980, they lost in 2004, and then now they're back in 2018. Who knows when they'll get back. I mean, they've got Carson Wentz and they're really good, but I think it would definitely mean more to that city and that franchise and that fan base. You know, New England would just be ring number six. I mean, that doesn't have much ring to it, you know, pardon the cliche, but I don't know that this one really matters as much in the grand scheme. You know, down the road, I don't know if they'll, I mean, the teams that have six, you have people struggle to remember which six they were. I think this is just another one you add to the pile, whereas Philadelphia doesn't even have a pile to start, and they've got Pittsburgh across town that's leading the league in Super Bowl titles. So I think it means more to Philadelphia.
I completely agree, because I think that, you know, I don't think it's a ridiculous claim to say that New England is headed toward, you know, the end of its twilight or the end of its prime. But barring some sort of extreme fallout with the Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady era, you know, we saw the reports come out recently that there's some issues there. Unless that turns into something so extreme that it breaks up the dynasty, I don't think they're done playing at a high level. So I think that even if they lose, they have another solid 3 years in them. At least competing for championships, even if not playing in them. Whereas Philly, like you said and alluded to, this is really sort of a stepping stone for them. And you don't know when they're going to be back. You don't know what's going to exactly come from this. Now, all of that said, I got to go with Patriots as my official prediction here. I am picking a very close game. I'm thinking a 27-24 win by the Patriots. I just can't bet against Tom Brady at this point. That said, I think we end up with either I think we end up with a defensive player as the MVP of this game, because I think that they force, or the Patriots force Foles into some bad mistakes. I think that Foles ends up having a couple interceptions, if not, you know, maybe three. I think the team as a whole does have that scoreless quarter like we talked about, and I do think it comes as a direct effect of the Patriots defense not necessarily playing conservative. You know, you said your final prediction. Who's your MVP prediction? Do you think it goes to Foles for getting them there?
I think it's going to be an obscure player. I think it's going to be somebody we don't expect, because I think both teams have pretty obvious guys you could choose from, but it's usually the game-changing plays made in the Super Bowl are not by the guys you know.
Yeah, so, a la Malcolm Butler.
Malcolm Butler, Malcolm Smith, Dexter Jackson, yeah. You know, guys we hadn't really heard a lot of before the Super Bowl, and now they're household names. Timmy Smith is another one. I think on Philadelphia, you know, Malcolm Jenkins or something could win it. I don't know. I would hope, you know, maybe Chris Long, maybe he gets, you know, a pair of, you know, key sacks late in the game and secures the win. Or maybe it's LeGarrette Blount, who, you know, you don't really hear about much anymore since they got Jay Ajayi. But I think it's going to be one of the guys that are driving the team from behind the scenes that gets the MVP this year. I don't think it'll be Foles. I don't think it'll be Jeffrey or Aguilar or anybody like that. I think it's going to be somebody that's an unsung hero.
I do agree. Like I said, I think it's probably a defensive player, but I'm picking one on New England's side. It sounds like you're picking one on Philly's side. You know, I'm sure we will get together and do this again next week, next time we get together. We'll break down the Super Bowl. We'll give our team grades. But Casey, we got to wrap it up here. What would you give me as my grade for the very first host of this show, or the very first hosting session of this show? Give it to me.
Well, it's a parallel universe, so everything's opposite. So you get an F+. So
I'll take it.
In real life, that's an A+ if we ever get back there. So, you know, I think it was an outstanding job, and you know, you didn't have to deal with Gene, so that's just magical that you got him out of here too. So good. You know, host looks good on you. I appreciate you hosting. I think you did a great job.
Thanks, man. I'll take it. As for this show, though, that's going to be a wrap. Thank you everyone for listening. Tune back in after the Super Bowl when we do break down what we saw, what we thought, early off-season hot takes, all of that, and even more importantly when Casey is once again at the wheel. Until then, I'm Bryant Knox, he's Casey Mabbitt. Sunday is the Super Bowl. Let's have a good time. Come back and we'll talk about it next time. Be well, my friends.